Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback writer.
This is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors. It is March 7th, 2022, and this is show number 110. And I am your host, Tom Riedel. A brief intro to today's show. Going to have on author Jay Supine, and he has written Wapsipinicon Summer. And we will talk to him in about 15 minutes. Now, more about us. Here's where you can find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriedel.net. That's thomasriedel.net. It'll be in the in-blog section, and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for the Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at TomRiedel56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line, and we will get back to you. A special note, we can now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both sites as well. Upcoming authors on The Writer's Lounge on March 21st, 2022, Claude Bouchard will be back on The Writer's Lounge after being away for 10 years. And he will talk to us about his Vigilante series, a very interesting and consuming series it is, and I'm sure you're going to love it. On April 4th, we have an open, so we have not filled that yet, but we will. And if you want to find out more about that show, you can go over, of course, to the Writer's Lounge Facebook page. And I hope you'll tune in to these exciting upcoming shows. And now on to the next segment of the show, which is Writer's Topics. On the last Writer's Lounge broadcast, we discussed a book with best-selling author Robert Dougani, and the topic of that book revolved around the war in Vietnam. And ironically, our guest author today has written with that same subject matter in mind. So many of us will never know what it's like to fight in a war zone and will never experience the horror of watching our friends and even our enemies die right before our eyes. Our clip today in Writer's Topics is a repeat of the last show because it does fit. His name is Rick Hazen, and he served in the United States Army 4th Infantry Division from 1968 to 1970. This three-minute clip is called The Dancing Man, and after that, we'll be back to talk to Jay Sapine on the Writer's Lounge.
Working for the Federal Forest Service, 1967, out of Mapleton, Oregon. Girlfriend, planning on marriage. Going to be a regular human being. Get married, have a family, build a house, and retire. Get a gold watch. 1968, got a draft notice. Got on the plane, I believe it was in Fort Lewis. Landed in the Cameron Bay, got off the plane, got onto these buses. The windows had expanded metal over them, and I thought that was odd. It was more like getting on a prison bus. But news to me, the expanded metal was over the windows to keep the grenades out, not to keep us in. They took us out to a field, and they pointed to different groups of where we were supposed to go. And I was assigned to Delta Company, 3rd of the 12th, 4th Infantry Division. Fella told me and pointed in the direction. And I walked over to a bunker, and there was about seven or eight guys standing there. And I walked up and said, "Hi, my name's Rick. I'm supposed to be here." And Sergeant said, "Here." And he handed me a box of 200 rounds of M60 machine gun ammo and a belt of 200 rounds of M60 machine gun ammo. Said, "These are yours." And then he handed me a mortar. And he said, you'll carry these everywhere you go." And my journey began. We climbed on a chopper, a helicopter, a hilltop with trees taken off and bunkers around it. And from there, we started walking. We spent probably 6 hours walking. And a sergeant said, "We're setting up here." Next morning, we got ready to move out. We had eaten breakfast, and a couple of the cans had been thrown out from our depression out in the undergrowth. Off of the trail came these people, these soldiers, Viet Cong, approaching us from the trail. They were ducking into the tree line, and they, unbeknownst to them, they were headed straight for us. They kept walking and walking, and we all crunched down, and with our M16s and our M60 machine gun, a lieutenant in the Chinese Army walked up and saw a discarded peach can laying on the ground. And when he looked up, he was hit with probably six M16s and an M60 machine gun, and he danced. I carried that image of the dancing man for a long time.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. Kind of gives you a little bit of a flavor for what our boys encountered when they were over in Vietnam, and certainly the story today that we're going to hear from will go into much more detail on that. Again, that book is Wapsipinicon Summer, written by Jay Sapine. And I want to remind everybody out there, if you're listening live to the show, you can call in 914-219-0868. That's area code again, 914-219-0868. You can talk to Jay or myself, and we'd love to have you call in. So go ahead and listen to a little bit and then give us a call. We don't bite. But anyway, now I'd like to talk to you about the book, Wapsipinicon Summer, and here is my partial review of that book. Annie Crawford returns to his hometown of Anamosa, Iowa, after learning of the death of his dad And it's then and there that his memories of the summer of 1966 consume him. With visions of fishing with his uncle on the river to time spent with his father, he sees things a little differently than he did as a child, and he comes to grips and how the war and how the Vietnam War changed his life and how it impacted the people in his hometown and in America as a whole. Billy West, a well-known and admired high school athlete and graduate, returns to Anamosa after a tour in Vietnam. Suffering from PTSD, he has changed, and he struggles to regain the normalcy of small-town life, as well as pursuing the love of his life, Anna. While trying his best to regain the life he remembers, there are others in the community who look down on Billy and work to make his life miserable. One of those people is Joe Metzel, a bar owner who was hell-bent on taking revenge on Billy after the two had a run-in with each other. Hatred and love collide in this love story between Billy and Anna, and the people of Anamosa are, sorry about that, they're changed forever by events that happened a world away, a war that changed and molded America. From the first several pages, I was immediately captured by the author's ability to create these wonderful small-town characters. And now it is my pleasure to welcome Jay Sapine to the Writer's Lounge broadcast as we now push the magic button to open the doors to the Writer's Lounge, and hopefully it will work. Let me see here. And this should bring on Jay. Jay, are you there?
I am, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, can hear you very well. How are you doing tonight?
Great. I'm very doing good. Very well. And thanks, Tom.
Yeah, and you're calling from Iowa?
Yes, I am. Central Iowa, yeah. Near Des Moines.
Okay, and what's the weather like out there tonight?
It's a little cold tonight. You know, we got about 4 inches of snow last night, so it's March. What can you say, right?
Yeah, in like a lion, out like a lamb, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Jay, tell us about how you became a writer and what was it like living in Anamosa, Iowa?
Oh, boy. You know, Tom, before we start, can I just say, I just want to say thanks. Thanks for reading the book and for giving me a great review and just dedicated to our veterans. It's my heart to veterans. And so I just want to say thanks up front. And, you know, so I appreciate that.
Right.
So Anamosa, Iowa. I would just say, and I tried to capture a little of this in the book, the freedom that I had as a young boy growing up. For me, it was in the 1970s. And, you know, Mom and Dad both worked, and we as kids were able to do anything and everything we wanted, and we did. We ran free. And it was a great time as a child growing up with siblings that did the same, and where you knew everyone in town, and everyone knew you, and we had a heck of a lot of fun, whether it was at the swimming pool or fishing on the river or swimming at the river. It was just a great place to grow up and to come of age.
And as I have learned about you, doing a little bit of research with you, I do know that you are also a veteran of these United States, and appreciate your service. And we as writers, sometimes we struggle with finding a story worth telling, and some of these tales swim around in our heads for years before we get it down on paper. Yet some stories are right there in the forefront, pounding on our skulls to get out. Wapsipitan Khan's summer was like that for you. And how did you feel about getting it out? What prompted you to do that?
Yeah, no, great question. I personally just come back from a couple of deployments in Iraq, and I finished my active duty after 20 years. And then, you know, that's a toxic environment for everyone. Doesn't matter if you're in Korea, World War II, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, you do and see things that that change you forever. And it was therapeutic for me. It was in me, and I needed to get it out. I needed to wrestle with some of those demons a little bit and reconcile the things that I'd seen and done, and And this was the way that I was able to get through that time in my life. So that's really why I wrote the book. And, yeah.
Well, good, good. And we also learned that you are a West Point graduate. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, you know, it's West Point's it's an interesting experience, to say the least. You know, you could talk a few hours about this one, but you know, it was an amazing time in my life, and to be around a number of wonderful leaders and who shape you, and if you get through that whole grind, put you in a position to lead soldiers, and that's when change really happened for me personally. It was just going through that at West Point and then going out and being around the wonderful soldiers and sergeants and officers that we have. And anyway, it was a great, launching point for me to, you know, really understand the limits of my heart and, what I could really do as a leader. So no, it's definitely a launching pad, as it is for many of our leaders in America.
Right. And I had the privilege of being down in that area of West Point. Can you give us any stories about what it was like to be in that area of the country?
Well, everything is gray at West Point. Let's just start there. The uniforms are gray, the mountains are gray, and it's the long gray line, right? And so it's a tough, cold environment. And, you know, you're 50 miles from the city, but it never feels like it. It feels a little like prison some days.
Okay.
And you live a pretty austere lifestyle for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say you don't really have the pleasures of touring around that area too much.
Not so much, no.
No.
Not so much. It's a beautiful area when you visit, but if you're happen to be a cadet at West Point, it's a little different lifestyle.
Yeah, I rode a bicycle down through there on my way to New York City in 1993, and it brought to my attention all of what everybody that goes there must feel and struggle with as you become warriors. And I think it's very important. It's a very important part, I think, of the, you know, the background of your story. Obviously, you're writing from knowledge and you're writing from that experience. So I think that was very important to get in there. Do you think war ever serves a useful purpose when we're really better off after shedding all that blood? Are we really, is it something that really needs to happen? Or, you know, how does this sit in your mind as someone who's lived through it?
And it's a fantastic question. And we're all seeing that today, right? We're seeing evil in this world today.
Yes.
And I would just say that evil is real and it exists. And, you know, that we have men and women that stand up against that. Warfare is a horrible, horrible thing. And my book, probably as much as anything, is an anti-war book. And yet men and women go forward and do those things for love of each other and love of country. And so, you know, is it necessary? I don't know if we will in our lifetimes ever escape it. If you go back in history and look at the last century or two, there have been very few periods in American history or in world history where there's not been struggle, strife, and warfare. And we're, you know, for us, it's pretty clear cycle of every 10 to 15 years, we're doing something. And we're seeing, you know, some of that again today. You know, as we thought we were walking away from it, other threats become real. And I guess never underestimate the evil that exists in this world and the necessity
right.
to stand up against it. Unfortunately, that is a reality, and that's been the reality for centuries. And whether we want to accept that or not, that's, you know, it is. I think if you look back, you know, would you ask that question after World War II? Probably not. Probably not.
Right. Right.
And yet technology and things like those have changed, which is really, you know, there's far, far, far more gray. And far more gray today in this global economy. And so, you know, that's a tough question to ask today, and tough question for our leaders. You know, and that's why we have to really be mindful of what the leaders of our country are thinking about and doing right now. So good question.
Right.
And, you know, if I knew the answer to that, quite frankly, you know, I'm not sure what we'd be doing, but I'm sorry.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. Sometimes it reminds me that it just takes one person to set in motion a war like we're now seeing over in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what has happened. So I think we all should remember that sometimes we have to stand up against evil, and sometimes it is necessary to fight and to lose lives over something so precious as our democracy.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, we salute you guys, and it's sometimes not easy. And as your book points out, especially with the Vietnam War, a lot of those guys came back to horrible reactions, I would say, from the general public in regards to what they had to do over there. I think people have maybe been a little more educated since those times, where I don't think that they encounter that as much, but it was pretty terrible what those veterans had to face when they came back to America. How do you feel when your novel was finally done and ready to go off to the printer? That exciting time when we send our baby out into the world.
You know, it's kind of numb, actually. For me, I was just kind of at peace with it, and I knew that I'd given the best that I had. It was the best that I could do, and I was good with that. And I hope that readers would find some joy or find something that helps them better understand those that went before them and those that are around them today that are serving. So I was great with it. I felt like I'd given it my best, and that was enough.
And we should point out that this is Jay's first novel, but he has written the second novel, which is Angels of Mount Hope. And that is a prequel to the one that we're talking about tonight. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
And how's that going for you?
It's going well. You know, writing Wasi, Pinnock, and Summer was it was therapeutic for me. And then you start that next book, and you don't want to repeat the first book, right? And so I took this one in a whole different direction. And what I love about Angels is it's a book that really complements Wopsy. It's a prequel, and yet it has a whole different core set of characters and some of those that are in Wopsy. And so it really complements the first book really well. It gives you a full, a deeper picture of the first book in the second. And so I had a lot of fun with that. And you can kind of do that when you play with time a little bit, you know, when you write something in one period and then you go 10 years earlier or a period earlier, a generation earlier, and you can complement that generation. So I had a lot of fun doing that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that sounds very challenging at times, but it's something that's fun to do as a writer with all of our talents that we have.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's tedious for sure. It gets a little tedious when you're measuring days and months and dates and making sure that everything is lined up correctly. And so there's more than one piece of notes to make sure it all ties together effectively and you leave no gaps.
So do you use an outline?
You know, I start with a very, very general outline of I know where I want to take the story and I have a general perspective of what's going to happen during the story and likely where it's going to end. And yet I also let the characters and the situations take me wherever the story needs to go. So it's far, far more of a journey than just a cookie cutter outline and a race to the end. And so, and that's the joy of it all, right? I mean, that's where you get surprised at what characters do and where they take you. And so that's the funnest part of this. For me personally, is being surprised when you walk away from the computer and you're like, I didn't see that coming.
Right.
That was something.
It's kind of like you're the god, and then when you create that character, they have their own free will and they do with what they want. I think that's special when that happens.
It is.
It's a lot of
it
fun.
It is, and, And it sure is. And when you walk away from it, you're like, wow, what just happened? That was the coolest thing. And just to be a part of that and watch the characters take the story where it needs to go that you didn't expect and to be surprised and then let it take it in a new direction or maybe a little change in the direction. It's a lot of fun for sure.
Right. Right. What's been the reaction from some of the people living in Anamosa?
I think I've got a really strong following. It's a small town where everyone knows everyone. And the first book, I think I really wanted to lift that community up on a pedestal because it's so special to me growing up there. And it's still special. And it's been really positive. I've got friends and family still there and a good solid following there. So that's been a really nice piece to it. But, you know, Anamosa is like any small town Midwest, really. It's a farming community. And it's kind of a little rough and tough town. It's a river town. But it's a great little town, a great place to grow up.
Do you live far from there now?
I live about 2 hours, little over 2 hours from my parents, okay. And I have a brother that lives there, and so we get back there often.
My wife
is also from there. She grew up on a farm. I grew up in town, and we met at the swimming pool. It kind of happens in those little communities, and so her family's back there on the farm.
The characters and also the places that you wrote about in the book, there's one scene which is pretty definitive for the course of the rest of the book, happened inside of a bar. Is that an actual place?
It actually is. That's the general store out in Stone City. And so Stone City is a little town a couple miles from Anamosa. And Stone City is kind of famous because the painter Grant Wood, who painted the American Gothic, that's what he's most famous for. He's from our hometown, and that's all true. And he actually painted a painting called Stone City. And in the middle of that is what's known as the general store, and it's a restaurant bar. That still exists. That's there.
Very good. Very good. Billy West, is there a lot of you in him? We were just talking about characters. Did he... Is there a lot of you in Billy, or is he just sort of on his own?
I think he's more on his own. I see my brothers in him. I see my dad in him. A little of me from a veteran's perspective and what he went through. So I think there's a little bit, like every character that we all write about, it's, you know, there's a little bit of you in all of them. And so, there's a little of me there, but it's a mix of those that are closest to me.
Mm-hmm. And did you involve yourself with doing a lot of research, and how was that for you?
You know, I really didn't do a lot of research. I wanted to get, I think, the history right. And so if I did research, it was around whether it's the Chicago Cubs and the game that they were playing on that specific day in July and capturing that, or, you know, if artillery is being called in this area of Vietnam, making sure the grid coordinates were accurate and correct. And so those, just about anything historical like that is all factual and correct, and you can run it to ground. And so I wanted to make sure everything was lined up there. And that's probably where I did most of my research. But more than anything, the book is, it's about heart. It's about love. And there wasn't a lot of research that needed to be done about that.
I imagine at West Point, you probably got a lot of, did you get a lot of history taught to you regarding war and, you know, how to live in a combat zone?
You get a lot of history about warfare and about just history in general. And, you know, West Point is more than anything, it's an engineering school. And so there's a lot of calculus and physics and engineering there that really shapes who you are in terms of problem solving. I think that the ability to perform in a hostile environment really came out of just the training post West Point that I had in the military and the Army, being around the soldiers every day and the sergeants every day and the officers every day, that really kind of shaped me and made me at least hopefully effective in that environment.
Uh-huh. Very good. And now getting back to social media and the marketing of your two books, How's it gone for you? Is that giving you any challenges, or do you have any regrets in what you did on social media?
I don't really have regrets. You know, you can always do better. And that's such a, you know, the whole marketing piece is a little bit of an animal for most writers, I think, is how hard do you push? How far do you go? You know, in some ways you're balancing all of that activity with your personal life, with your work life and all those things, your family. And so you push as hard as you can. There's always probably more that you can do. I would say that, you know, it's probably a gap for me as I've rolled out these two books. I think it's been pretty solid on your standard social media channels, and it's done okay on Amazon, but there's clearly more I can probably do there.
Mm-hmm. And what would you suggest to someone who is starting out in writing in regards to marketing and such? What would you advise? And also I wanted to ask you about, do you have an editor that works with you?
So on the first one, I would say read as much as you can, soak up as much as you can. There's no one right answer when it comes to marketing with your story. I think that it's great if you have a niche around a community, and you know, that's an easy place to start, obviously, friends and family, and then grow from there. That's kind of a direction I've gone that's been pretty effective. But you can't read enough, and there's so many opinions on there about the right way to do it. I would just say keep challenging yourself, keep reading, because it's ever evolving, just like technology is evolving, particularly with social media. So that was, I think, maybe a question, answer your first question. And your second one, again, was, what was your question?
Regarding editing, do you have an editor?
Yeah. Yeah, I had multiple editors for both books, actually, and they're both fantastic. And both, you know, you realize sometimes kind of quickly, you're like, wow, you know, writing is a lot of fun. It's a lot of joy. Editing is grueling. It is gutting. And I had two editors that I worked with in two phases for both of my books, and both were wonderful and kind and really helped me see the gaps and really helped me clean it up and you know, put my best foot forward for the reader. And so, yeah, I absolutely, if you know, there are some people who are just amazingly gifted that can write without an editor. I know that today that I'm not one of those. I'm a good storyteller, but you know, the grind of getting it all right from an editing perspective. Yeah. I reach out for help there.
How many drafts did you write, Jay?
Oh, you know, probably a couple drafts of both of the books I've written. You know, you write one, you let it breathe, you share it with those close to you, and then you feel like you're in a comfortable spot with it, and then you push it to an editor, and I'd say 2 to 3, I'd say full drafts for both of my books. And that's just what it takes for me to get it to where I think it's presentable to the reader and will be a source of joy for them.
Uh-huh. And where do you do all your writing? Where do you go to? What's your favorite place to write?
I have a little office here in our home, and I look out at the trees, and it's just, that's where I kind of shut down and tune everything out, and it's where I try to find my characters and what they're going to do next.
Do you write with music or do you not?
I do write with music, and it's just a way to kind of, and it takes me in some ways where I need to go, but I get up at about 4 in the morning, 3 days a week, and that's when I do my writing. And, you know, you do that, and after a year, you have a book, give or take. Yeah.
So you would say you're more of a morning person than you are writing at night, right?
For sure. And, you know, for everyone, we all have to find our creative time. You know, when is it that everything flows for you? And for me, it's morning where there are no distractions. Everyone's asleep, and it's just my time to open up my heart and let it all roll.
Do you use any writing programs to help you with writing?
I do not.
There's a couple out there in the market.
Yeah, yep. I don't.
Okay. And who are your favorite authors?
I'm not sure if I have a favorite author. I have a couple of favorite books. Once an Eagle always stands out for me. I've read it 3 or 4 times by Anton Mar, and it's a book from post-Vietnam, but it's really about leadership. And Waiting for White Horses is another one. So as I think about Wapsie Summer, those two books kind of, there's a little bit of both of those there in that read.
We touched on a little bit. Did you say you're self-published, or do you have an actual publisher?
I'm self-published.
You're self-published. And what would your advice be to anyone that decides to go traditional or self-publishing?
You know, it depends what you want. For me, this is my first book was something I needed to do. I needed to get it out. And it was therapeutic. And so self-publishing seemed the direction to go. It was a little bit of the path of least resistance to share the story. And I think it's worked out well. And the second book, you know, kind of the same process. I like self-publishing. I like the freedom of it. You know, I don't do this for a, this doesn't support my lifestyle. I have to balance it with work. But it's something that I love to do and it brings me joy. And so, you know, if I can tell a good story and share it, I want to share it, you know, sooner than later and share it the way that I want to share it. So that's why I go self-published.
I guess we should ask you, what do you do for a living?
I work for a retail chain actually here in the Midwest. And so, yeah. So, yeah.
Uh-huh. And that keeps you busy.
It keeps me really busy. Yeah.
And what are your hobbies besides writing?
I love to fish. I love to travel. Obviously, love to spend time with my wife. We're empty nesters now, and whenever I get a chance to be with my kids, you know, that's top of the list. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I would imagine that, and I know because I lived out in Minnesota for 20 years, but I know that around those parts, you have to be a fisherman to enjoy the environment. And
as I
read your book, I was intrigued by the Wipsinnikan River. And here I go trying to pronounce that river. But did you have a lot of interesting fishing stories from fishing that river? Did you get a chance to do that as you wrote about in your book?
Yeah, I grew up on the river like most boys did in that town, you know, that time period, you know, that you lived down there by the dam, you fished every day. And then by mid-afternoon, you're at the swimming pool. It was just kind of, we lived on our bicycles and it's just what you did. And so, yeah, that was a big part of me growing up. And it's something I still share. You talk about Minnesota, I've been up to the Boundary Waters, wonderful place.
Yeah.
And going back up there again here this summer, and just unbelievable place. For fishing.
You ever been ice fishing at all?
I have not. That's something
That's
I haven't quite got my
right. It's a lot of fun.
Do you ice fish?
I have been up on I can't remember the name of the lake. Now it's a big lake up. Oh, it's Mille Lacs up in Minnesota. I've been out there in the village of ice houses and fished with a friend in a cabin on the ice that had 4 bunk beds, a TV, it had a VCR, and it had all these other luxuries of home.
Unbelievable.
Carpet is
floor. Awesome.
And I caught a 27-inch walleye at 2 a.m. in the morning when it rang my bed bell.
That's awesome.
So
that is awesome.
If you ever have a chance to go ice fishing, it's a great time. What kind of fish came out of the river, the Wipsipican River?
So smallmouth, catfish, northern, you know, just kind of your normal, what you get out of a Midwest river. A lot of carp, obviously, but you know, it's a big catfishing river, a little bit of smallmouth, some northern, some walleye. It's a good place to grow up.
Very good. How, now we'll talk about reviews. How do you deal with good ones and the bad ones? Have you experienced any of those too?
Of course. You know, I don't get too wrapped around the axle about either one. I guess I'm honored when I see that folks see value in what I've given them. And I'm glad that I was able to touch their heart. And that's good enough. And some, you know, like anything, like anything that you create, it's not necessarily going to be for everyone, and that's okay. And so I don't get too wrapped around the axle. I do like to listen, though, and try to sharpen my edge a little bit if, you know, if there are things that I might have dwelt too heavily on or things I could clean up going forward, then obviously, you know, you want to be better at crap next time. So I'll listen for sure.
Uh-huh. And everyone, I want to remind everyone out there listening live, you can give us a call and talk to Jay at the area code 914-219-0868. We have a little less than 20 minutes left. So if you want to give us a call, we'd appreciate it. So would Jay, I'm sure. Jay, there are several references to history in your novel. And if you could meet just one person from history, who would that be?
Wow. You know, I guess I think around Abraham Lincoln and all that he did. Yeah. You know, you think about Christ and the fact that and the impact he's had on all of us in this world.
Right.
That's a hard one to say, but from an American history perspective, I definitely lean towards Abraham Lincoln. And just I'm not sure that at that time in space that we really knew what he was doing and how he defined who we are today, still defining us. And
yes.
I'm not sure if there's been anyone more impactful on who we are as Americans. So I probably lean towards Abraham Lincoln. Be great to sit down at the table with him.
Right, in regards to the Civil War and how he navigated through that, hoping we'll never have to deal with that again.
Yeah.
Yep. And so what's next for you after the second book? Have you got anything in mind for a third book?
Yes, sir. So I'm just, you know, developing the next story right now. And the first one is a Vietnam story. The second one, it takes place around Korea. And the third will be right on the heels of World War II. And we'll have we'll have some of the same characters and a whole cast of new characters. And yet there'll be this common thread throughout all three around love, around courage, around hope, around our veterans. And so I look forward to sharing that story. It's coming.
So what time period would that be? Are you going to touch on the Korean War?
So Angels of Mount Hope does touch on the Korean War. It's really centers around the Korean War. And so this next story, which will take place about 45, 46, 47, that time period, will really be focused on veterans, leaders who come back and are dealing with all the things that happened in World War II. And so I'm excited to get to write it, and I think it's a great story, and I think that it will put a cap on all three stories in a way that'll be good for the reader. So,
go back a little bit here to Angels of Mount Hope and tell us a little bit more about the characters of that story. Can you give us names or a sort of a synopsis of that book?
Sure, absolutely. So the story centers around a man who was horribly wounded in the Korean War and comes back to eastern Iowa outside of Anamosa, and he actually works in a junkyard. And he's also an artist, and he creates these statues, which are pretty special. And there is a supernatural kind of flavor to the story, which I think is really interesting. And it deals a little with the horrors of war, but it also deals, I think more than anything, the stories about the valleys that we all walk through in life and how we come out of those valleys. And so that's what the story's about. And it complements Wapsie Pinnock and Summer very, very well. And there are characters in it that had a major role in Wapsie Summer and have a minor role in Angels of Mount Hope. And yet it really rounds them out more completely, and then it also tells a whole nother story that ties the two together really well. So now I'm excited for readers to read it and get their feedback.
Any idea, like when you're writing these things, if any of this could ever be in a motion picture? Did you ever sit down and envision? I mean, what's your mind's eye show you when you're sitting down to write these stories? Are you seeing it as a moving video picture as we do when we go to the movies?
I think when I write, I really capture just the simplicity of the character and the space around them. So it might be a small shack where with one light over the sink that's somewhat dim, and a small table and sawdust on the floor, and just the simplicity of that, and then the conversation and what comes out of that conversation that really, I think, illuminates the characters' hearts and where they're going, what they're thinking. So that's kind of where I go. I really try to develop the character and the space around the character. And if that's believable, I think it takes the reader down that path of a good story.
So you believe
so
that
I don't really
character...
think, I don't really, I'm sorry.
You don't, go ahead.
No, I don't really have any of these grandiose visions of something being a movie or anything like that. I keep it pretty simple and try to just build on the basics of life and human life and what we all feel. It doesn't matter if it's in the 50s or the 40s or the 60s. Human beings are generally the same. It's just our hearts are the same. It's just a situation that may be a little different. You know, the technology may be a little bit different, but our hearts, the way we love, the way that we hate sometimes, the way that we have all those ranges of emotions are all real. It doesn't matter what era you're in. And so that's where I try to capture it.
Right, right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And would you say that the character is more important than the actual plot? As you're saying, you're focused more on the character in the environment than the other way around?
I think there's only a handful of stories out there, right? There's only a handful of plots, if you will. And I think that real joy for the reader comes in how believable it is and how relatable it is. And if you develop that character well and you develop the environment around them well, they can see it, they can smell it, they can feel it, it takes them down that path on that towards that plot, which will make it even better.
Right. Right. And you did a superb job, Jay, with the hate and love in your book that I read about, and they sort of collided, and it was very well done, and it entrapped me into the story.
Thank you.
Because I was side of love, and that really, really was very well done the way you did it, between especially the owner of the bar and then Billy West coming back.
That was
very well done.
Thank you. There are a number of go ahead.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say that there are a number of themes, and one of the themes of that story is just the spectrum of love and then love gone black, you know, hatred, and that spectrum, and then the impact of both on others and the fruits of both on others and in the world around them. And so I wanted to capture that. You see both the whole spectrum. You see one person serving others and another person completely serving self, and what becomes of that. And so that was a theme. And then the other theme probably around that is just the choices that we make. You know, love is a choice. And there's a choice there that each of those characters had made, and one was for others and one was for self. And so then you see, you know, how that all plays out. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Something just struck me as you're talking about love. It must be almost difficult and probably impossible to have that sort of feeling when you're sitting in a foxhole. Would you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't. I would say, and I've never sat in a foxhole in that environment. I just want to make that clear to anyone listening. I have been in a hostile environment. I do know what fear feels like in that environment. I do know what it feels like to be on the two-way rifle range and to have people that are trying to do something to inflict harm on you. And I would just say that in that environment, you are, quite frankly, you become in some ways the best version of yourself. You never live more. You never love more. You never love your soldiers more and those around you more. And you realize after you've gone through it, you'll probably never do that again. Because it's that heightened experience that you probably never experience again. And so love is real in that environment for sure. And
so
your
emotions are steeply intensified. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
That's,
in good
that's
ways
amazing.
and in bad ways. Yeah. In good ways,
right.
And in bad ways.
And I would imagine your smell, your taste, your hearing, your eyesight are all acute when you're dealing with what you're dealing with in those circumstances. It's something that I don't think I could ever imagine ever happening with me, but I imagine that's what happens when you're in those situations.
There is that. There's slow motion time and kind of rising above a situation. And yet I think we all feel that and have felt that if you have a car accident or something horrific happen, things happen that are a little out of body that can happen in that. And it's in some cases when you're really in that environment, it can be like that. And so that can happen, you know, tomorrow driving down the street to some of us. So it's not just for soldiers that are out there doing what they do.
Right. Right. Okay, Jay, we're getting close to the end here, and this is what I usually say to the writers on the show. It's where you shine. It's sort of your Oscar moment, if you want to put it that way, where you have any parting words that you'd like to share, or would you like to thank anyone out there for your successes with what you've done so far?
Yeah, obviously, I think my wife, Amy. I love my life, and anything good that comes from me, it's only because of her. And I couldn't have written these books without her letting me do that, just being at my side and giving me the love and support. And then my kids, my parents, my siblings, all that has really given me a life that I've been fortunate to be able to be where I'm at and write stories and share them with others. And so there's that. I would just say, maybe for the writers out there or those that want to be writers and have a story in their heart, let it out. Just sit down and do it. Just let it roll and let it take you wherever you want to go and where it wants to go and enjoy the ride. It's it's worth it.
Very good. Very good. And where can we find you out there on the internets?
Well, I'm on Amazon. So self-published, that's a good place to start, I guess. So you can find both my books there. And I have a website, animosastories.com. And so you get a kind of a lay down of some of the both books and as well as some blogging that I've done there. And so I would direct if anyone's interested towards Amazon or towards animosastories.com. So.
Uh-huh. Very good. Jay, it's been a pleasure having you on the Writer's Lounge, and I wish you nothing but the best with your next book. I will soon be reading it, hopefully, when it comes out. And it's honorable to talk to somebody that has served our country, and it's I don't even have the words to express, especially these days, in how much we should be appreciative and care for the guys and the gals who serve this great country of ours. And you were one of them. So I appreciate that. And thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir.
And
Tom,
again, best of luck.
Tom, can I just say one more thing to that comment?
Sure. Go ahead.
I came home. And so, those Gold Star families, those soldiers who came home really hurt. That's who we should honor. I'm not one of those guys. And so I don't want anybody to think I'm one of those guys. And so those are the leaders and the folks that have given so much for us. So I just want to part with that. Thank you.
Right. Very good. Jay, good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
I appreciate
it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And there goes Jay, and now we're on to the next segment, which is the final chapter, where I tell you about Monday, March 21st, 2022 at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 2 weeks from tonight. We will be talking to Claude Bouchard, who I earlier explained was on the program 10 years ago, and he will be on with his Vigilante series. There's 6 books in that series, so we will be reviewing that shortly, and we will be talking about that and also about Claude and what he's been doing for the last 10 years. Until then, see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and the eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot.